Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
This is Bloomberg Business Week. Insight from the reporters and editors who bring you America's most trusted business magazine.
Plus global business, finance, and tech news.
The Bloomberg Business Week podcast with Carol Messer and Tim Stenebeck from Bloomberg Radio.
As you know, President Biden and congressional leaders are planning to resume discussions on the debt ceiling next week. They had been scheduled to meet today, but session was postponed as Republican and Democratic staff members continue to negotiate. Meantime, as you've been hearing on Bloomberg, our Anne-Marie Horden catching up with U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen in an exclusive from the G7 summit in Japan. And she says there's no satisfactory solution to solving the debt limit other than Congress basically acting to do just that, raise the debt ceiling. Here's some of that conversation.
There is no satisfactory solution for the United States, a solution that will be good for the economy and financial markets, other than Congress acting to raise the debt ceiling. There are potential different paths that could be taken if that doesn't happen, but there is not a single thing that can be done that will save the United States from considerable economic and financial damage.
But this plan was outlined back in 2011, and you were there at the FOMC meeting about it, and it said that Treasury principals and securities would be paid. Is this something that, at least for contingency plan, has been discussed with the president?
So my understanding, I was at the Fed in 2011, is that this plan was never presented to the president and never approved. And
but would you present it now?
Look, we would. We are working full time to work with Congress to raise the debt ceiling. That's where our focus is. We know that the only good outcome is one in which Congress acts as it has many times, almost 80 times since 1960, to raise the debt ceiling. What global markets and American households and businesses need to see is that we have a Congress that's committed to paying the bills that we've incurred as a consequence of our legislation, that we're not a deadbeat country. And if Congress fails to do that, it really impairs our credit rating. We have to default on some obligation, whether it's treasuries or payments to Social Security recipients. That's something America hasn't done since 1789, and we shouldn't start now. So we've not discussed what to do. If that doesn't occur with the president, our focus is on getting it done.
Because as you know, treasuries are the bedrock of the global financial system. And the asset managers I speak to, the investors, they don't have the luxury of not contingency planning. So at this point, should they assume that debt may not be serviced if there's no deal?
Look, if Congress doesn't raise the debt ceiling, we face economic and financial catastrophe one way or the other. And that's why our focus is on making sure that Congress does raise the debt ceiling. I feel that that's something we're going to succeed at doing, and we're working hard to make sure that that gets done.
That, of course, is the voice of U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen speaking exclusively with Bloomberg's Anne-Marie Horden earlier today from the sidelines of the G7 summit in Japan. Hey, we want to get more on the debt ceiling, the looming deadline, how we can just kind of get a handle of the U.S. government's finances, especially by those people we pay to do just exactly that. Maya McGinnis is with us, president of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. She's on Zoom in Washington, D.C. Maya, it's been a while, but great to have you here with Matt and myself. I feel like we are constantly fighting for a responsible federal budget.
And never getting it.
And we never get it.
Yeah, what? You feel right. That is, it has been a long, long time since we've had a responsible federal budget. The fiscal environment is getting worse, and it is in great, great connection with the fact that the political environment is getting worse. And we now have two parties that are so busy fighting against each other, trying to either maintain or gain leadership majorities, that they aren't willing to do the hard work of budgeting, which means deciding what you want to do and deciding how you want to pay for it. And so we're borrowing for pretty much everything. It's contributing to a bad fiscal situation, a bad economic situation, a bad national security situation. And it's tough to see what's going to turn this around in any meaningful way.
So when was the last time we had, you know, a balanced budget? Is it just because of COVID that we're doing this tremendous deficit spending?
No, it's been a long time sort of constant deterioration. So you'll recall that President Bush and then President Clinton put forth packages, and President Clinton worked with Republicans in Congress, put forth packages
Tip O'Neill.
On track, and Newt Gingrich, and I mean, there was a lot of Domenici. Things were different back then. They did work together. They might not have enjoyed it, but they got some things done, and they got budget surpluses. But quickly after that, we entered a period where we had wars that weren't paid for, unpaid for tax cuts, and recessions, all of which made the situation worse. Surpluses turned to deficits. But now things are much worse. We borrowed a lot during the great financial crisis and COVID, and we should have. Those were exactly when we should have borrowed. But we also borrow when the economy is strong. For instance, the past few years, the economy has been so strong that we are plagued with inflation, the opposite of what you should be doing, borrowing more. But we have borrowed for every single piece of legislation other than the Inflation Reduction Act. And that fiscal policy has exacerbated the inflationary situation.
Well, so crisis problems and crisis or management, or is it more, I'm a big follow the money. And when I follow the money in Congress, it's all about election and making sure that you are playing to the right individuals, institutions, organizations, sectors to make sure you are back in Congress. And so then I always feel like we're not necessarily getting the smartest policy. We're just trying to do whatever we can do to make sure we get reelected. And that means not ticking off anybody. That to me is an incredibly broken system, Maya, and I don't know how we ever get around it.
You have articulated the reason for my ongoing despair, which is I am not at all convinced that we are going to turn the ship around as I watch the growing polarization and all the additional factors that are contributing to that polarization in this country. I think debt and deficit are one of the casualties of the fact that we used to have politicians who knew what they had to get done, put in place savings packages, lift the debt ceiling. They'd fight about it, but they wouldn't threaten default in a way that where they worked together enough to get things done. But importantly, some of those things were difficult. And the truth is, political pandering works. So just I'll give you an example. Social Security and Medicare, they both face insolvency. We have to make changes. It's not a political statement. Anyone can read the trustee reports. We have to make changes. There's nothing to disagree there. There is plenty to disagree on what changes we should make, and that's where the policy disagreement should be. But instead, first President Trump, now President Biden, after the State of the Union, pretty much everyone is out there promising not to touch those programs instead of using their important platforms to let the country know that we have to make changes so we can pay the benefits that we've promised and not face insolvency and not have across-the-board benefit cuts or provider cuts. But the politics of demagoguing Social Security and Medicare are so successful. I am deeply concerned about the presidential election we're about to see, where everyone is going to be tripping over themselves promising what they won't do instead of how they would actually fix the programs. And that's damaging.
Maya, why don't they? I mean, we knew when the last budget was passed that we were going to have to lift the debt ceiling to pay for it, right? Why don't they just make that? Why don't they work that into the budget?
And just got about 45 seconds, Maya.
Yeah. Well, first, there has been no budget. The budget committees failed to do budgets, and we don't have a budget ready for next year. And that's quite common. And second, I believe part of this deal that they have to lift the debt ceiling, which has to be lifted without drama, should include a commission that does two things. Reforms our structural imbalances. Everything's on the table. Look at Social Security, look at Medicare, look at taxes. And second, reforms the debt ceiling so it becomes an actual part of the budget process, because we can't continue this way. It's too dangerous for the country, and it's not effective. We need to fix our broken budget process.
All right, going to leave it there. Hey, Maya, great to talk with you once again. Maya McGinnis, president of the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, joining us via Zoom from Washington, D.C. Matt, let's just go home to our spouses. Hey, debt ceiling, let's just raise it.
Yeah.
We have no debt ceiling.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern.
Listen on Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, and the Bloomberg Business app.
Or watch us live on YouTube.
You know, all week we've been talking a lot about AI. The world is awash in artificial intelligence. We had Google, we had IBM, Palantir this week. And I got to say, Matt, ever since Microsoft announced that $10 billion investment in OpenAI's ChatGPT, it's just been like off and running.
Yeah. I don't know if we knew at that time what we were going to get,
It
was a massive amount of money. And I remember thinking, wow, that's a lot that they're paying for this. Because until then, AI, I had never had a great experience with it. But now I'm obsessed with AI-powered Bing. And by the way, I couldn't be far enough away from Bing previously. Like, if Bing accidentally popped up on my computer, I changed it to Google as quickly as I could, and I made Chrome, like, you know, my default. Yeah. But now AI-powered Bing is so much more useful to me than Google search.
All right, so this is good to know. So it's changing, impacting your behavior. Let's see how it's changing things in our next guest's life. Back with us is the co-founder and CEO of the $3.8 billion market cap content and file sharing company. We're talking about Box. Aaron Levy is with us on Zoom from Redwood City, California. And Box just announcing its own integration of OpenAI's ChatGPT. That was earlier this month. Aaron, anyway, nice to have you here with us. How are you? How's business?
Good. Good to be here. And thanks for having me. We definitely are extremely excited about AI and the role that it's going to have and how companies work with all of their most important content and information. And you know, really the big opportunity is when you think about how much data we have in the enterprise that is sort of what we call unstructured data. So structured data is, you know, stuff that goes into a database. It's CRM information. It's financial data. Well, inside of your documents, it's all unstructured. It's your marketing materials. It's your contracts. It's your financial.
Tell us how AI, generative AI, is going to change things dramatically for you,
especially
or
at
for
Box.
Customers.
I mean, when I see, first of all, the utility of your company is undeniable. So I'm not downplaying it, but it's a box, right? We put stuff in and we take stuff out. How does AI help?
Yeah. So, well, we store tens of billions of documents for customers. And so with AI, we can actually unlock what's actually inside of that data for the first time ever. So you can ask questions of your documents. You can look inside of a contract and figure out what terms in that contract might have the highest amount of risk. You can look at a marketing asset and ask AI to improve that marketing asset. You can look inside of an HR document and ask questions. So it's a complete transformation of what we can do with all of the data we have in an enterprise.
How does it move the needle for top and bottom line? So basically, how does it, for you guys, move the needle financially in terms of growth of users and or usage?
Yeah, so we think it's going to just unlock the potential of what you can do with your content. So we can speed up productivity in an enterprise. We can make employees be able to have instant expert analysis on top of their data on demand. So again, imagine being able to talk to a lawyer instantly about the contract you're looking at, or a marketing expert about your marketing asset that you're creating. And so all of a sudden, you get all of the power of these advanced AI models, and you can start to understand your data in completely new ways.
So how do you think this is going to improve your revenue? I mean, what's this going to add to the top line? Or is it a bottom line booster?
Yeah, I think it's ultimately going to be a major tailwind for enterprise software in general. We haven't, sort of finalized exactly how we're going to monetize or commercialize the product. We've first introducing the technology to a select set of customers. There'll be some elements that we likely do charge for. And, you know, that could provide a top line boost over the long term. But we also think that this is going to be incorporated into all software. I don't think you're going to expect to use sort of, you know, less intelligent software in the future. And so I think all the enterprise software that we leverage is going to fundamentally be infused with artificial intelligence, and that's just going to be the expectation that people have about their software going forward.
Is it cheap or is it expensive to use? I mean, I don't know. Do you pay like a one-time thing or license every time someone uses it? How's it going to work out in terms of what you pay for it?
Yeah, well, we pay for the underlying usage of the GPUs that the AI models run on top of. And so every time you ask a question, that has to go into a set of computers that go and, you know, process that data. That can be kind of relatively expensive, you know, more so than the usage of just a core CPU. But it's pretty manageable. And so we're going to, you know, find an efficient way to price that into the product.
Cool. Safe to say there's still a lot to be learned, a lot to be developed, a lot to be fine-tuned when we're talking about all of this, Aaron?
Yeah, I think what we've worked on is fundamentally focusing on things like the accuracy and the reliability of the answers that you're getting back. So, you know that sometimes you'll go ask ChatGPT a question and it can do this thing called hallucination, which is it sort of makes up the answer in some cases. We've worked to ensure that doesn't happen with corporate data. And the reason for that is we're telling the AI model to only answer the question based on the limited set of data that we're giving it, which dramatically improves its ability to answer accurately. And so these are the kind of things that we've worked on: data privacy, data security, data integrity, working with these AI models. We don't have any of the AI models being trained on the data that we're leveraging. So we're building really a safe and secure and compliant solution for enterprises to bring AI into their organizations.
You know what's very cool? Throughout the year, I get various tax documents in the mail, and I guess I put them in a file in my filing cabinet, a paper filing cabinet, right?
Okay.
But if I could put them in Box and then just forget about them, and at the beginning of the next year, hook up my, you know, tax software to Box and say, hey, go find all of my tax documents, and then you have this AI set up, I wouldn't have to do anything, right?
That is certainly the potential of this, exactly what you've just thought about. And one of the things that's incredibly exciting is imagine you're inside of a sales organization of a large company, and there's hundreds or thousands of documents that have the answers to critical questions you might have. Now you can just ask the question. You can say, what's the price of this product, or what's the best way that we sell this technology to our customers? And AI will give you an answer back based on the existing assets that you have in the enterprise, as opposed to, waiting around for some expert inside the organization to hopefully be able to answer your question right at the right moment. And so these are the kind of things that we're going to be able to do with all of the data we have, leveraging AI.
I don't think my pitch was juicy enough for Aaron. I think he's looking at a much bigger scalable enterprise issues, and I was just worried about doing my taxes.
I do wonder, Aaron, though, where is it when you look at industries that you think will be the most uptick and most growth potential for you guys specifically?
Yeah, I think industries that are very information heavy, so financial services, consulting, professional services, global manufacturing, lots of supply chain data. These are healthcare, government, these are industries where there's a lot of documents, there's a lot of value that is trapped inside of those documents right now. A tremendous amount of intellectual property within these, organizations are trapped inside of files, and AI lets us actually go and leverage that data for the first time. We were talking to a customer within the media and entertainment industry, and they had this great use case that literally could not have been done before without AI, which is, they have a sponsor that wants to be able to sponsor certain projects, within the organization. And right now, they rely on kind of, fortuitous luck that the advertising person happens to know all of the projects that might be possible across the entire organization. They don't have a database where that knowledge is sort of kept inside of. But now you can actually just ask the documents. You can say, well, which projects would be most relevant to this particular sponsor. And so this actually is going to create new revenue generating opportunities for customers by being able to leverage what's actually inside of the data that they have.
All right. Good to check in with you, Aaron Levy. He is, of course, the co-founder and CEO of Box, joining us on Zoom from Redwood City, California. The only thing I would argue, Matt, is that we're still kind of figuring this out.
I just think there's so many use cases for it.
I don't disagree.
It is a juicy, juicy technology.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch Stratacoaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Business app, and YouTube. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
We are going to talk a little bit about Twinkies and Hostess Cupcakes, maybe some Big Texas Cinnamon Rolls and Clover Hill Honey Buns. Kind of hungry. These are all the brands and more that are under the Hostess Brands umbrella. They did report, by the way, earlier this week, some earnings. The stock initially popping on the news as much as 5%, but it did lose most of the gains by day's end following the report. Stock, though, up about 17% so far in 2023. So let's get a look at the business. I know Matt also talked with our next guest earlier in the week, Hostess Brands President and CEO Andy Callahan, joining us on Zoom in Chicago. Andy, how are you?
Carol, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, nice to have you here with us. Matt has been eating Twinkies and some other things heading into this
in
interview.
In preparation. Can I just say why?
I love the intro. Don't forget our Wortman cookie franchise as well. But we're proud of all of our brands.
Yes. Well, but Twinkie is the main. I mean, TWNK, Twink is the ticker. I went out. I talked to Andy, I think, yesterday.
You did, right?
He said they've changed. You know, they're constantly working to improve the Twinkies. And so I went out and I bought a lot of them. And I've eaten multiple. And they are very good. They do taste better than I remember last time I had them. They still taste the same,
headline.
But just more kind of zingy a little bit.
Yeah, well, being able to do great tasting and moist cake at scale is not an easy feat. We like it that way. It's hard to replicate our business, and we love bringing great high-quality snack products to consumers.
It's moist, Carol.
I like moist cake too. Hey, well, let's get a little serious though, Andy. I do think about your business. Like when you guys, what channel is it? Walmart? Where is it that you really sell the most of your product?
You know, one of the strengths of our portfolio, obviously that customer is a large and important customer of ours, but we're leading in single serve sales, immediate consumption. One of the strengths of our distribution is of our business is our distribution model. We're able to access almost everywhere that consumers are. And in the baked goods category, we're about 10 points higher availability than our next closest competitor. And that's really due to the power of our supply chain, our business model, and our access. So all of our customers are important to us. The diversification of our distribution is important. That customer you mentioned is obviously highly important. And we focus a lot on building sustainable partnerships with all of them.
Where do you, so I went to Duane Reade to get these. I did stop by the local, you know, like single, like mom and pop,
like
deli,
a market,
LA
a
Gourmet.
Market,
deli, they didn't have Twinkies, so I went over to Duane Reade. How do you get them into every shop, or are you only focused on like CVS, Walgreens? You know, what's your distribution strategy?
Yeah, so this is one of the beauties when we reimagined the business model that allowed us to create this great snacking business. A modern contemporary business under 100-year-old iconic brands that you talked about. We did it in a way with new technology. It allowed us to bring high quality products through a distribution system that's really hard to do in baked goods. So for Duane Reed, for example, a terrific customer, Walgreens, that we partner with, we have a distributor partner that are classic distributors that allow us to get it there. For some of our larger, maybe traditional grocery retail customers, we have a tremendous internal distribution network that we actually opened our distribution center several years ago, and we go direct to those customers through their warehouse. So it depends on the customer, but that partnership with our very important distributor customers allow us to get access to all small doors, large C-store customers, as well as smaller ones.
You'll be happy to know Duane Reed had three separate displays. They had, with the bread products, they had some Hostess, a separate Hostess section. With the candies, they had a separate Hostess section. And then right when you walk up to the checkout, they had a Hostess section there as well. So
it's called impulse buy. Like, you're standing on the line and you're hungry. I've been there. I've done that. Hey, Andy, I'm sure you've gotten this question a million times as, you know, people focus on healthier eating. And I'm not saying that what you offer is not, but I'm just saying, you know, I have a 20-year-old
she has
been for years turning things around, looking what's in the product. How do you think about that moving forward? And are you seeing pressure, you know, and demand from customers, younger customers, that, you know, they want you to shift some of what's in the product? And I think you have been to some extent.
We have been. We are, first of all, we make our products with real eggs, flour, like everybody does. There's certainly some other ingredients in there that allow us to get through shelf life, but we're working to minimize them as much. From a consumer perspective, nearly 70% of consumers indulge in snacks more than at least 70% of the time, and almost half the time. That's been an unrelenting trend over the years. Now, there's a false choice that consumers that eat healthy don't also treat themselves or reward themselves with indulgent snacks. They can both grow, and they are growing because consumers snack more often, and that trend's been happening. So we look to bring our snacks to consumers in a very contemporary way, whether it's a 2-bite bouncer that we just launched, or our new Kaz bars that are in multi-pack form, a smaller version, or a larger one that we do in our C-store for our male consumers that are looking for it. So we give them snacks. Snacks and indulgent snacks are on trend, and we do it in a very contemporary way. That's what brings them through. Just, we call it a moment of joy. And that's what our team works for, to inspire these moments of joy when consumers are looking for reward me, treat me.
You got
to
get
somebody, get off to a,
you got to get the Rock
start of the day.
You got to get Dwayne Johnson the Rock to eat these on his cheat day. You know,
yeah, and Rock should call me. I bet you Rock would love our Kaz bars. The Rock would love these Kaz bars, and I know his kids would too. Millennial parents, young C-store males. When we tested the Kaz bars, they love it because it brings the great cake we're talking about in a multi-layered form.
He's been pushing the Kaz bars for a long time. Andy, every time I talk to you, you're pushing the Kaz bar. I'll bite.
Andy, he's going to leave here and he's going to stop at the Duane Reade or something and find the Kaz bars. I'm just telling you.
Listen. We do both. We do our contemporary icons,
right?
Twinkies, cupcakes, ding dongs, reimagining them with quality and bringing them to our consumers, Andy, and also bring out new innovation. They both are important.
We got to run. I'm hungry. That's all I'm going to say. Andy Callahan, CEO of Hostess Brands, on Zoom from Chicago. This is Bloomberg.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. You need a company with extensive experience in specialized insurance. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and helping provide coverage that suits your needs. The Hartford offers insurance solutions that help mid to large-sized businesses, like yours, effectively manage risk, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. With extensive experience in underwriting, risk engineering services, and claims, The Hartford goes beyond the expected to deliver innovative, customizable solutions and service that your industry, that your business, demands. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
You're listening to the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Catch us live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Business app, and YouTube. You can also listen live on Amazon Alexa from our flagship New York station. Just say, Alexa, play Bloomberg 1130.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
How about you let me drive?
Oh, no.
Who's gonna drive you home?
Honey, please, I'll do the driving.
Drive on.
Excuse me, I want to drive.
It's the question that drives us.
This is The Drive to the Close.
That funky music will drive us till the dawn.
On Bloomberg Radio.
All right, everybody, let's get to it. We've got just about 17 and a half minutes left in today's trading session, getting ready to wrap up the Friday trade as well as the week. We got...
Ooh.
I know, right?
Thank goodness.
Why are you so tired?
I just got very stressed out in the last few minutes.
What happened?
I'm trying to organize a big interview.
Oh, okay. All right. So, yeah. Let's focus now.
Yes,
we have
okay,
a good guest
sorry.
Coming up. Right now, we've got, as we said, stocks kind of turning the corner, but still in the red, but off their lows of the session. You got a two-year note at 399. Let's get to it with David Dietz, back with us, senior portfolio strategist at PPAC Private Wealth Management. They've got about $10 billion in assets under management, and he joins us on the phone from Summit, New Jersey. David, nice to have you here. What is top of mind? Because it does feel like it was a bit of a meh week, although some of the action on the Treasury side of things was certainly interesting. But I don't know. We are all looking for direction in terms of what comes next. What kind of visibility do you have?
Well, it's debt cap negotiations, and that is dominating mentality, both on Wall Street, but also small business and on Main Street. We just got a survey that showed that the sentiment of small business people is now at a 10-year low. Consumer sentiment index that's released today showed that consumers were at a six-month low. And I think it's all because of the frustration in Washington as to failure to come together.
But can I ask you something? If I walked on the street of Main Street, USA, and I talked to people about the debt ceiling, I have a feeling, I don't know that everybody would be that concerned.
They wouldn't care.
Well, yeah. I mean, on the one hand, you're right. People are still going to send their kids to school next year. They're probably going to go out for dinner this weekend. They still have some idea to take a vacation in the summer. So in that sense, it shouldn't be a problem. But we can't say the risk of a default is 0%. And all the experts are saying that no one really knows what the effects would be, but these so-called foundation blocks, such as the Treasury debt, if they were to become undone and in default, what would be the fallout? It would not be pretty.
Yeah, well, actually, Anne-Marie Hordern was just talking to Janet Yellen about that this morning, saying, there's a lot of investment professionals out there who, they don't have the luxury of not caring about this issue, right? They can't make really a plan B. They need to be prepared in case there's a default. Do you have to adjust your strategy?
Yeah, that's a great question. First question every client today had on their mind was, what are we going to do about that? But, we go back to time horizon here and say, well, if you're in stocks, you shouldn't have a 1 or 2 month horizon. Indeed, that 10-year treasury is much below where it was just 2 months ago. So what people are saying in the marketplace, the experts are saying, in the short term, there's uncertainty and volatility. In the long term, of course, the Republic will pay its debts. They've raised this debt cap thing about 78 times since 1960, and they will do it again. The one thing I love about this, Matt, is this is not an asteroid coming in from outer space. This is not Putin in, an unknown quantity. These are just our top leaders just have to make an agreement to push that, kick that can down the road, and we're going to be fine.
David, what do you like right now? Let's assume that the debt crisis gets resolved and move on from that. What do you like in this market? We've had a pretty good run year to date. Obviously, last year was awful, but where do you want to put your money?
You know, everywhere except something that says we're all about AI. You know, if you strip out those 10 AI popular stocks from the S&P 500, you go from an 8% year-to-date gain to negative 2, which means, you know, quite frankly, Matt, we haven't done that well this year. And so anything other than chasing stocks because they have a big AI plan, you know, which could do as well as streaming did 3 years ago when that was announced, is something to be avoided. But, I mean, so we want to be diversified. I think you got to look at some of the.
Well, wait a minute. Is it? Can I ask you something though, David? Is it chasing AI or just being smart about it? I mean, you know, this technology, AI, nothing new. It's getting much more advanced. We've been talking about that over the last couple of weeks. You've seen NVIDIA and a couple of names, a handful of names that have really been the reason why you see market averages when they do move up or when they do rally. It's because of that AI connection. And yes, we'll figure out some of the stuff that doesn't make sense, but safe to say that this is going to impact our world in a pretty significant way.
You know, it will, absolutely. Just like the metaverse has said that it was going to impact our world.
I don't know that it's on the same level, though.
Well, so, you know, the AI, it's not a hard line, AI, non-AI. Many companies say they've been incorporating AI-like features for the last decade. So here's the thing. The large companies, no question about it, your Microsoft, your Alphabet, your Meta platforms, they're incorporating that. They're not the pure plays. Fine. They will be big players in this, and that's good. Where I'm discouraging investors from getting involved with is the smaller companies, which all of a sudden have an epiphany. You know, BuzzFeed in January said, oh, we're going to write our articles for the AI. The stock tripled. There's been no follow-through whatsoever. So that's where you really have to avoid.
By the way, David, we got a guy coming on later who's going to kind of gawk at all the people who lost money on crypto. And I was thinking you could have done the same thing with the housing crisis. You could have done the same thing with the dot-com bubble. Amazon is one of your picks. And I just wonder what you think. Where does it go from here? Because it's been an awesome ride for the last 25 years, right? But can they grow any more? They're already so dominant in online marketing.
Yeah, absolutely. I love Amazon. First, it's down 40% from its peak. So although it's been one of the best stocks that the planet's ever seen, it's still well off of its highs. What I like is they are market leaders in the two best businesses, in my view, on the planet. First is the cloud. We know the cloud's going to be growing at a double-digit clip as far as the eye can foresee. The other one is e-commerce. I mean, what's easier and better than just clicking on your screen to get what you want delivered to your doorstep? And they're number one there. You know, in fact, they have twice the market share over the next competitor on the cloud, which is the Azure of Microsoft. So I love that. I'm not quite sure I necessarily see the connection between e-commerce and cloud. So in a worst-case scenario, they could divide that company. We're seeing Alibaba doing some of that over in China and perhaps unlock shareholder value there. But I think here's an opportunity. It's trading, Matt, at 2x sales. You can buy Azure at Microsoft, but Microsoft's trading at 11x sales. Even eBay, which is an inferior e-commerce platform, mm-hmm. The Amazon's trading at a higher price per sales ratio.
All right, going to leave it on that note. Have a great weekend. David Dietz, he is Senior Portfolio Strategist and Managing Principal over at PPAC Private Wealth Management. They've got roughly $10 billion in assets under management. Joining us on the phone once again from Summit, New Jersey.
I love cheap price to sales companies.
That's pretty cheap.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Considering, right? All right, you are listening and watching Bloomberg Business Week on Bloomberg Radio. This is Bloomberg.
This is the Bloomberg Business Week podcast. Available on Apple, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Listen live weekday afternoons from 3 to 6 Eastern. On Bloomberg.com, the iHeartRadio app, TuneIn, and the Bloomberg Business app. You can also watch us live every weekday on YouTube and always on the Bloomberg Terminal.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.